We're so happy you could join us for this episode of The Breakdown. Today, we will be breaking down the 2020 election results and discussing some recent events. I'm Andrea Montenegro, and with me is my co-host, Dawn B. Shaw.
Hello, everyone. We want to remind you that the political views presented in this podcast are the opinions of Andrea and I only, and do not reflect the views of Women in Politics, a nonpartisan organization.
Right. Also, this episode will be more casual than our last. Donvi and I will be highlighting more of our own opinions, so we ask that you don't take our statements as facts. Please go out and do your own research to better develop your own opinion. That being said, Donvi, I want to open up this episode by asking you, how was your day?
It was good. A little cold. I live in the Northeast, so today in my region, was the first time this season that we've hit below freezing temperatures, which is not fun. But it's also very exciting because Thanksgiving is next week. How are you?
Well, now I'm a little shocked right now because I live in Texas, so it's like a completely different vibe. Like today was cold and it was like 60. So I don't know. Like, we have very different definitions of cold, but I've been doing good. I drove by myself for the first time today.
Yes, that is very exciting. I am all there for that.
I'm here to tell the tale, so obviously I did something correctly. Anyways, enough about us. Let's talk about politics. Beginning with, from the last episode, the most recent thing that happened after that was the Amy Coney Barrett confirmation. Amy Coney Barrett, or ACB, as she's been called, and as we will reference her from this point forward, was nominated with a 52-48 vote. It has sparked some controversy, less now, because we're currently filming like after the election happened, so it's definitely not as big as a thing as it was a couple of weeks ago, but I think it's still important to touch on it. What are your thoughts?
I think Amy Coney Barrett, Judge Amy Coney Barrett, and now Justice Amy Coney Barrett's confirmation to the Supreme Court. Honestly, I was a little bit shocked. I mean, I know most people were, regardless of their political stance. That was, the demeanor in which, she conducted her Congress hearings. I think most of those went public, and a lot of people did see some shocking things in there. There was that video where the judge could not name the first five parts of the First Amendment, which, as we all know, is one of the questions on the citizenship test. So regardless of just that, her career has not been as extensive as most people would like it to be. As a judge, she hasn't served as many years as most people on the on this bench have. At the age of 48, she doesn't have as much experience as, say, a Supreme Court justice should have. So it's a little bit exciting for those who want conservative change in the court, especially now that there's a 6-3 conservative majority. And it's exciting for women too, regardless of their political opinion, to see another woman on the bench. So, I mean, I think regardless of how you look at it, Judge Amy Coney Barrett's nomination onto the bench was a polarizing topic. I mean, there are so many different views on it for so many reasons, all of which I think everyone understands. She's notable for being a pro-life activist, and that's probably one of the biggest reasons why she's such a conservative icon, to be completely honest. It's because of her stance on abortion. What do you think?
Well, you know, I do believe that having more women in politics is very important, but in this case, I don't think it is something to be, for me at least, I don't think it is something to be celebrated at all. I don't think, when there's a woman in power, I believe she should use that power to represent women as a whole. And I don't think that Amy Coney Barrett has very similar to views to a large majority of women. You've already talked about, you know, her stance on abortion. And I think we should leave that for another episode because we could talk on and on about abortion rights. But it's definitely scary to some people, the idea that with a conservative majority in the courts, abortion could not be legal anymore. Now that the election's over, we know that Joe Biden, spoiler alert, Joe Biden won the election, or allegedly, I guess, since there's still so many things going on.
Still rejected president-elect.
Yes. Yes. There probably won't be very much happening now because, you know, we have, we know what, Congress is already majority Democrat, right?
Mm-hmm. The House.
The runoffs are in the Senate, right?
Yes.
Georgia. So we kind of can see that we're going to have a more Democrat-leaning government for the next couple of years, but it's still concerning to have a conservative majority in the courts. And also her stance on LGBTQ plus marriage, also concerning. She didn't explicitly, I don't think she explicitly stated that she was against the community. I don't think she also talked about abortion. She just kind of dodged the question. But as people have noted, her religion is stands against some of those things. So I just hope that as a judge, as a justice, she does separate, you know, her religion from what needs to be done, just as any judge should. And I believe that she can do well. I mean, I have hope. Hopefully things go well.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think even more concerning than her nomination and confirmation was, to me, was the fact that Congress let it happen. And I think that kind of takes us back to 2015. So if, Andrea, you want to talk about that and what it means for liberals and Democrats in this country to have a Senate majority leader who would allow this to happen in 2020, but not 2015, we could talk about the implications of that.
Yeah, there's some, obviously, there's some clear hypocrisy going. Also, my dogs are barking. I'm sorry if y'all can hear that. Sammy is a little bit excited. Everyone's getting home at this hour, so ignore the background noise. There's some hypocrisy happening, and it's already been pointed out, versus the stance that was taken by the GOP when Obama was leaving his presidency, because he had a very similar situation to Donald Trump, except he was not up for re-election. He had already served his 2 terms. And obviously the GOP did not want Obama to nominate a justice, and he did not. He did not. And I think the best example of this was Mitch McConnell, because he himself was speaking out about it in 2016. You know, he was adamantly against Obama nominating a new justice. And now this year, he was one of the most fervent supporters for Donald Trump appointing Amy Coney Barrett. So kind of interesting to draw some parallels there. And I think it's just a big result of like the polarization and our two-party system. But that also has to be saved for another episode because we could talk for hours about that.
Right. Just the basic facts of what we are referring to is that in February 2016, former Justice Antonin Scalia, who served on the bench under the Obama administration, from 1986 to 2016, that is a very long time, that's 30 years, he served that long, and when he died in February 2016, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell did not let former President Obama appoint a replacement, which is interesting because this this was an event that took place in February, and it's not as if the president shouldn't perform his duties around 7 months before the election. It's I think the president should always be performing their duties. But the issue with this is that the same man prevented presidential duties 7 months before the election and let the same exact thing happen during the election, actually. By the time ACB was confirmed, 60 million people had already cast their votes. And as we know now, many of those 60 million people who casted early and mail-in ballots were left-leaning liberals or Democrats. And so I think that's an important thing to just notice.
I think it wouldn't have been such a big thing if a similar situation to this had not happened in our most recent election before this, or two elections before. You know, it's kind of, what the heck, Mitch McConnell? What are you doing? What's up? You know? Why would you? I don't even understand. And on Twitter, I was just scrolling. You know how Twitter nowadays is just all politics. That's all I see on my Twitter feed. And I was just seeing tweet after tweet where people were like, Mitch McConnell, you have to take the same stance you did. Because obviously opinions change, but you have to, just to protect your integrity as a politician. And he did not do that. And a lot of people were not happy. So, yeah.
Yeah, speaking of integrity, though, I think it's important that in the name of full disclosure, we also talk about how the Democrats utterly failed at holding their position when it came to this. We got little to no feedback, or we didn't get any aggression from Senate or House Democrats over the period of this confirmation. And yes, I understand that Mitch McConnell, being Senate Majority Leader, gets a little bit more power than normal Senate members. I think it's important that the Democrats have the same kind of unity when it comes to issues such as this that go against their positions. They have a little bit more unity. I think that's something that everyone else also saw during this period. Again, in the name of full disclosure, neither party is innocent here. I mean, obviously the GOP made it happen, but to be completely fair, the Democrats let it happen.
Yeah, and obviously, let's talk about expanding the courts, because that was the Democrat response. They were just we have a conservative majority, what are we gonna do? Expand the court. And I think we both agree where we're just why would we expand the court? Obviously, it would be easier to get left-leaning policy through when we expand the court and get more Democrat justices in there. But I think it's kind of just I can't get what I want here. Let's just change how things are run and do this, you know?
I think as we are criticizing the GOP for something that they did in 2016, and now that they're doing differently in 2020, if the left wing lets President-elect Biden expand the courts to get his own legislation through, I think we'd see an interesting response if a conservative president tried to do that in the future, and the left wing did not let him do that. While I do agree that a 6-3 majority favoring one side is a little bit dangerous, and the courts were made to be more equal, with one tiebreaker, one neutral moderate tiebreaker. This is not how the courts were meant to function. It seems that although they've already always been political, they were created by our founding fathers to not be this political. So I think this just takes us all back to the first presidential debate and then the first vice presidential debate, in which both now vice president-elect and president-elect Kamala Harris and Joe Biden refused to express their stance on expanding the courts. So they said that if Amy Coney Barrett was to get confirmed, they don't know what they do. They just kind of dodged the question, maybe hoping that she wouldn't get confirmed, but obviously she did with a Senate majority. So, I mean, personally, I was always just thinking of the posterity, right? And I think Andrea was also always thinking the same thing. So what do you think?
It's just kind of like, at this point, it's done. It's over with. I don't think we should expand the courts. It kind of got overshadowed by the election. So let's segue into that. Once again, Joe Biden is projected, has been projected, I don't even know what to say. People are celebrating because Biden won. But Donald Trump, on election night, he says to all of Americans, all his followers, he says, you know, we won. I have won. I have been reelected. And that caused some problems, right? Because obviously not all votes were counted on election night. But we kind of had predicted this would happen. Donald Trump would say on election night, or the night of election day, that he had won because we knew that there would be a conservative majority voting at the polls. And later on, as vote by mail ballots were counted, it would show that Biden was actually winning, and we knew this would all happen. This was kind of something that was projected to happen, and it's kind of been something that I genuinely think the Trump campaign has been planning this the entire time, because they have been trying to plant, you know, this distrust of the vote by mail system. And obviously, yes, there are some security concerns with vote by mail, but they've been doing this since the beginning of the year. This was like orchestrated. They were ready. And obviously now, I think today I saw another tweet from Donald Trump. I know we're referencing Twitter a lot, but he said, we have won, or I won this election or something. And I don't know what's happening. I think he's passing out lawsuits left and right, as is his right. Like, he can do that, but I don't know how to feel about this whole tantrum that he's kind of throwing.
I think even Republicans, most Republicans following the election, I think most of them agreed with Democrats and left-wingers that Donald Trump had been adopting this kind of rhetoric, this kind of demeanor, in front of everyone in the United States was dangerous for his legacy. I mean, to be completely honest, him posting at 2 a.m. The day after Election Day, 2 a.m. Eastern Time on Twitter, saying that we won very bigly, it's just not something that we need to see a president doing right now, especially through all this like polarization because of COVID-19. I think it's important for presidents to have a kind of respectability, yes. Especially after they lose, or while they're in the process of losing. I just don't understand how it's considered fair for a president to tweet on November 16th, I won the election, ! And this, that just kind of reflects the last 4 years of his administration. The tweet before that says that John Bolton is one of the dumbest people in government. And I've read the Bolton memoir, and I can't say that it really reflects a dumb person.
Well, we know that obviously tweets are not going to be fact, and just like Donald Trump's tweet on election night, he did not in fact win the election. But yeah, I think a former president should be gracious enough to just pack your stuff up and leave. Just like at this point, usually the White House would be getting packed up, everything, everyone would be moving, like inaugurations in January. So like, let's get the show on the road. But no, Like, he's going through all of this. And it's perfectly fine that he's doing that, because I definitely think that verifying voting results, it's great. You know, what's it going to do to us? It's going to tell us more accurate results. And as we've seen, all of the lawsuits that he's been filing are kind of falling through. I can't cite specific ones, but I just know that a lot of them have found that there was no fraud. Some of them have found some discrepancies, and those discrepancies found usually put Biden with more votes. So I don't think it's helping him very much. But once again, and I've said this like 3 times, and I'm going to say it again because I want y'all to understand, I think this is perfectly within Donald Trump's rights. Like, if he wants to file a lawsuit, let him file a lawsuit. But there should be a level of graciousness that he should be taking when leaving office.
No. Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, we see how the lawsuits and the recounts turned out for former President Bush prior to the recount. I mean, Al Gore was winning. But obviously, following the recount, George Bush became the president of the United States, which is interesting, because the tone there wasn't sore loser. It was person who was confused about the election results and thought that they could have been different. And that situation was different. That election was different because of the margin in between the two candidates' votes. It wasn't as high as the margin between President-elect Joe Biden and President Donald Trump's electoral votes. So I think at some point, people just need to understand what it means to lose.
Let's just pack up 2020. Let's just move forward. 2021, we're gonna have our first female vice president. It's gonna be lit. Party in the USA by Miley Cyrus will be playing. It's going to be awesome. I'm so excited. That being said, we're leaving 2020, and there's some coronavirus updates because a vaccine has been formulated. They've done some testing, and they think they can get it out as early as December of this year. So very exciting. Very exciting news.
Right. The first thing that President-elect Joe Biden is really focusing on after his inauguration in 2021 is strengthening his COVID-19 response. The day after he was officially projected president-elect, President-elect Joe Biden and Vice President-elect Kamala Harris went up there and they said, by Monday, we are going to have a definitive coronavirus task force, a plan, and we're going to have experts, and we are going to listen to the science, which is
as they should.
Something that Donald Trump's administration has never said before. So we can talk a little bit about the Biden task force, the diversity, and the intelligence, and what that means for the future of the United States. So what do you think, Andrea?
Well, I said it. As he should. You know, I think this is how coronavirus should have been handled from the beginning. That's what I think. I think this is how coronavirus should have been handled, how it should be handled moving forward. I am very excited, and I'm looking forward to getting a vaccine out there and going back to normal life in 2021. I mean, not immediately. Obviously, don't go out in January of 2021 just because there's a vaccine. Like, wait a minute. And once everything cools down, because coronavirus is getting so much worse, but because of like the whole quarantine fatigue, which honestly I'm feeling, I just want to go and like eat in a restaurant.
Yeah.
I'm tired, but I'm going to keep doing it because numbers are going up. And yeah, the house is a wonderful place to be, is all I have to say. But tell me more about this coronavirus task force.
Sure. Just to add on to what you said before, with the holiday season coming up, Thanksgiving is next week, and Hanukkah and Christmas are next month, we see a rise in cases, which are just projected to increase even more. So I think this is the best time in which Joe Biden could have came in and said, "Hi, I'm your savior, and here's my task force." So I think the expertise and the diversity of this task force in its entirety is just represented by the three co-chairs. Obviously, it's a pretty big task force, but the co-chairs include David Kessler, former FDA commissioner, Marcela Nunez-Smith, Yale Associate Dean for Health Equity Research, which is an important position. I think that's something that we've been missing for the last 4 years, health equity. I think that means that Joe Biden is going to try to afford everyone the possibility of getting cured and getting the proper medication. And that's something that he prioritizes. And third, but not the least, is Vivek Murthy, who is the last co-chair, but he used to be the former Surgeon General. So, I mean, that's incredible to me. I think it's also important to notice that Donald Trump's task force was headed by Mike Pence, who we all know does not have any experience in medicine. So that was just a nice refreshing change of pace for me.
Yes, when you said Joe Biden came in as our savior, no, like, for that's, I genuinely felt that. I was like, here he comes on like a little cloud. Obviously, he's not a perfect dude. Go watch our other episode, episode one, to hear all of what we think about Joe Biden. But when I saw the news about the task force, I saw all of the qualified, amazing people. I was just like, this is great. He's like on a little cloud. There's orchestral music like playing in the background. There's like a fog machine. That's what was going on in my head. But yeah, very exciting news. I want things to go back to how they were. And I want to stop like making public health about politics. Why was wearing a mask politicized? There's so many regrets, and I know that in the future we're going to be in like history books, and they're going to be like, this is why you don't take public health and make it a thing about politics. Like, it's public health, come on. What are you doing, you know? What was happening there? But yeah, and I think that wraps. Did we just wrap up the episode? Because I don't have any other.
We did.
I went on a rant about Joe Biden on a cloud with orchestral music and a fog machine in my head. No one is gonna watch this, Dombey. They're gonna think I'm crazy.
Hopefully, if you do watch this, you don't think Andrea and I are crazy. but we are very excited about the next few months to come.
Should we tell them about our plans, or like, is that like top secret? We can give them a hint.
You should just tell them.
Okay. We have a Okay, wait. I don't know if I should whisper. We have a Christmas episode coming up, everyone. It's not going to be about politics, but it's going to be about women in politics. So if you want to learn more about our organization, that should That should be our next episode, tentatively. Yes. And it should be up sometime next month around Christmas.
Exactly. So please feel free to tune in for our next Christmas special episode in mid-December, where we talk about a refreshing change in women in politics and how the 2020 election has really brought on a lot of change. So that's a very exciting thing for us.
And on that note, I think we've ended on a beautiful note. Christmas episode to come. Or wait, not Christmas. I'm sorry. Holiday. Episode. We support all of your holidays. Hanukkah, Christmas, whatever it is. It's going to be a holiday episode. For me, it's Christmas, but it is what it is. So see y'all then. Tune in for that. And yeah, thank you for listening. If you've come this far, I don't think this is like a YouTube comment section, but DM us a B emoji.
Or a question that we should answer.
Or a question.
Next podcast.
That, yes, the question would be
either
more helpful. Either or. Or if you have any feedback on like what you think we should improve on, or any thoughts about what we should talk about in the future, DM the Women in Politics Instagram and we will get back to you.
All right. Thank you for listening.
Thank you. Bye, everyone.
Bye.